Hello, everyone. Welcome to the TF Blockchain Podcast, where we interview blockchain and digital currency innovators building our distributed future. I'm your host and founder of TF Blockchain, Jonathan G. Blanco. TF Blockchain hosts premier conferences, events, and media featuring blockchain leaders actively growing the industry. With our platform, we are connecting business and technology executives with blockchain innovators leading the charge. Through our interactive speaker presentations, facilitated networking sessions, and our video and podcast series. Before we get started, wanted to tell you about our consulting arm, TF Agency, where we work with blockchain companies, companies looking to adopt the technology, entrepreneurs and investors looking to understand the space, and with those looking to grow their career in this emerging industry. For more information, please email us at info@tfagency.io. In this episode, we listen in on a live recording from our recent TF Blockchain Conference, TF3, held on March 28, 2019 in Seattle. This panel featured Jonathan Miner of K&L Gates, Lawrence Lerner of Pythia, Joseph Cutler of Perkins Coie, and Nate Whitehill of CryptoSlate leading the conversation. They talk about the regulatory landscape of blockchain and cover such topics as differences in state, federal, and international laws, using an exchange to launch a token, the changing crowd sale environment, and options for entrepreneurs in the space. Regulations in blockchain is a big topic right now because of the lack of clarity, and I hope that after listening to these experts, you can start to gain some insights and continue to learn. Whether you're an entrepreneur, investor, or simply interested in blockchain, I hope you enjoy this panel from TF3.
All right, hey guys, my name is Nate Whitehill. I'm the CEO and co-founder of CryptoSlate. Quick show of hands, how many people here have heard of CryptoSlate? Okay, cool. All right, so today we're going to talk about regulation. Let's do a quick round of introductions.
Joe Cutler from Perkins Coie helped found our blockchain and digital assets group and have been doing the work for a long time.
Lawrence Lerner, CEO of Pythia. We're a venture fund.
Jonathan Miner, I'm associate at K&L Gates and part of our blockchain team there.
Thanks a lot, guys. So to start it off, feel free, anyone to take this. Where is it most important that we see regulation happen, on the federal level or the state level? And really, what should take precedence first?
I'd say it kind of depends on what you are worried about in the regulatory space. So my background is mostly focused on kind of securities law, so I think a lot about the federal level. And clarity there is probably one of the top of mind things for many people who want to build something in this space where they're going to raise money of any kind.
Yeah, full disclosure, I'm not a lawyer. I'm kind of coming from the VC perspective. So following on what Jonathan said, what is the business that they're trying to do and where are you founding it? And those are where we're going to look at the law. So it's going to kind of depend on what it is.
But your question is, where should the regulation be? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I've been thinking about a lot is the fact that we still, like, practitioners in the space can differentiate between, say, a security token or a utility token or a blockchain solution that doesn't involve a token. And I think that people are trying to regulate tokens like it's a capital T, and they don't realize that there's a wide variance of them and they do different things. And there's no one-size-fits-all regulation for that. So if I could wave a wand, I would sort of do like a token taxonomy where, you know, if it's a token that functions like a currency, then it should be regulated by FinCEN and by state regulators in the money services area. If it's a function like a security, then it should be the SEC. If it's a utility token that gives access to services, then it should be the CFTC and governed like a commodity.
And this is why it's so hard in the United States, because we've got so many different regulatory bodies, sorry, I'm in a soapbox, that make these rules. Other countries, and we're going to talk about them, have one simple regulatory body that says, do this or not do this. And you left out states, because states have some influence on it as well. We need to consolidate.
So from that, when do we see, or when do we expect to see any real major blockchain regulation or legislation taking place on either the state level here in Washington or federally?
When? I mean, there's a ton of it. I mean, there's been a lot of regulation already. The problem is, it's a, as you say, it's a patchwork, right? And there's no... it's like a body that's running around without a brain. There's just all these different things happening in everyone's specific space, but no one's coordinating it.
I think part of the problem that we have in the U.S. right now, too, is we've got states who are taking way different approaches. From Wyoming on one side, most people are pretty happy about, in Texas, that is just totally, you know, shutting things down at the moment, too. So you've got a real issue there where if you're trying to have a business that operates outside of one state in the U.S. and every tech startup in this space is doing that, you really have a patchwork that's super difficult to kind of sort out.
I don't have anything to add. Just... yeah, what Jonathan said.
So bringing it back to really what's happening around the world, what jurisdictions do you guys see as doing regulation correctly, and which ones are handling it poorly?
Soapbox. Okay, you asked for it. None of them. If you look at all of the countries, Malta, Switzerland, all of the places everybody points to and says, they're doing it the best. These are small, homogenous populations. Switzerland is a population of 8.7 million people, slightly less here in Washington State. It works really easily when you look at a socioeconomic population that does everything the same. Malta has 34,500 people in it. There are more people in 10 blocks in Seattle. Everybody's working their way through it. The Swiss federal government just made an announcement that they are going to start putting regulations forward up to allow these things. I think the governments that are doing it with open minds are doing it the best, and where there's public-private dialogue. End of soapbox.
So where there is clear definition, such as Switzerland, I know they've been working on trying to establish what the difference between a utility token is. Is that what we need, to have clear definitions for the different types of tokens or different types of use cases that exist?
I believe the answer to that is yes. I do. I mean, I think for two reasons. Right now, because the legislature – let's talk about the U.S. for a second. Because the legislature hasn't taken an active role – then all of the different regulatory bodies are in a squabble over who gets to govern what. And it's like a Venn diagram. Because they don't understand the technology very well, or they want a little bit of extra power, or they're irritated that another agency isn't doing enough, you know, they will reach and reach and reach until they get pushed back. And I think having the legislature clearly define this type of, and think about it, like tokens aren't, they're a new technology, but they do activity that we already know about. Like they serve a payment function, they serve a hold of value function, they serve an access function, they do something in a piece of software. And based on that activity, the legislature just needs to bind those two concepts together in a definition that says if it does this and it's a digital asset, then traffic cop says go to FinCEN or go to the SEC or go to the CFTC or and so on and so forth. So I do think that would make a humongous difference. And once that meta issue has been settled, I actually think the regulation will kind of, the keel will get deep in the water and it'll straighten itself out.
So with that happening in places like Wyoming, does that mean that if Wyoming is able to enact clear definitions of utility tokens, that it may kind of drain other people to leave states, maybe such as Washington or other neighboring states, to go to Wyoming? Or is it really going to need to happen from a federal level to really make a true impact?
So there's the past couple of weeks, there's been some activity going around with the Uniform Law Commission, which sets something called the Uniform, well, it doesn't set, but it sort of it establishes what it would encourage most states to adopt as sort of uniform commercial law across the states so that there's harmony there. And they haven't had the chance to read exactly what they were proposing, but it was the sort of proposal that they had for a taxonomy around blockchain things was pretty widely panned by people who know the industry well. And they have, I think, actually stepped back as of like a few days ago and said, hey, we're going to think about this a bit more. But that's an example of something on the state level where, you know, there's certain things that federal law preempts, like securities law, for example, or where you have to look to a federal level for your guidance. But there's an awful lot of stuff on the day-to-day operations of a business, the money transmitter stuff, the money licensing, all that, where, you know, you're looking from a state-by-state basis. And if we have these organizations Like all of us in this room, if we get involved with those organizations that are thinking about, hey, what does policy look like across the states, and sort of help them push them in the right direction, that's one of the things that will help us get, you know, the boat pulling straight a little bit more in the future.
Yeah. What happens in Wyoming stays in Wyoming. That's what the bills say. 577,000 people is the entire state population. So if you're looking to build a business there and looking for talent, resources, infrastructure, all the other things that you want to build your company, it's a little bit sparse. No offense, but it's a little bit sparse.
Well, and that's the point. Like, I've never gotten, I mean, Wyoming, it was a good PR move by Wyoming.
Yeah.
But, like, it didn't have a real practical effect. Because at the end of the day, if you build a business and you go to Wyoming and, you know, neener, neener, I'm in Wyoming, you can't do anything to me, you're going to have a date with other regulators, right? Because the truth is that most of the regulation of what blockchain companies do, especially when they're either consumer or investor facing, focus on the consumers of that product, not the purveyor of the product. So the fact that you're in Wyoming doing business has almost nothing to do with how you're regulated.
So for an operation like Cardano, which recently announced they're going to be moving to Wyoming, it really won't make any difference from a federal level for them to operate in Wyoming.
Or from all the states.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their founder has a pretty good travel budget, so he'll be okay.
Absolutely. I actually had the pleasure of interviewing Charles Hoskinson, the founder of Cardano in Malta. Let's briefly talk about IEOs and really kind of the hype around them. Binance recently conducted three IEOs, I believe two of which have been up since their debut. What's the difference between an IEO and an STO and an ICO, and why would a blockchain company consider doing an IEO?
You're shifting trust, right? And a little bit heresy to say in a blockchain, oh, you're trusting someone, now it's all decentralized. In an IEO scenario, Lawrence's opinion is you're going to the exchange and saying, did you do all of your homework? Did you check up on these people? Is everything kosher? And you're going to do the KYC, right? So that you've shifted trust to them. So do you trust Binance? Do you trust Bittrex? Maybe you trust them more than the founders. I think that's a good thing, how it plays out. We've got a handful done. This is all net new, so you're bringing this fresh to us, which is awesome.
One thing I'd add is the one of the real net benefits of an IEO is, to the extent you have concerns about money transmission related to the sale of your tokens, you know, that's an unresolved question. I mean, it hasn't hit yet, but, you know, technically speaking, if I go take someone's money for Bitcoin, or, you know, or I sell them Bitcoin in exchange for money, that's money transmission. And so it is not entirely resolved why, when we sell a token and accept money for it, or Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency, that's not money transmission. And so by giving that to an exchange that's already licensed to do that, you can sort of just completely write that off your books as a problem. So that's the practical benefit of using an exchange to launch your token. But for people who think that they sort of get out of the securities concern or the other concerns related to ICOs because they use an exchange, other than that and the trust issues, it's sort of a net wash. I just think that all you're really doing is saying, don't trust me, trust this exchange who you already have faith in to do things right and not screw it up.
So if we were to fast forward, let's say 5 to 10 years in the future, and looking back at how we're currently handling regulation, especially at the federal level, do we anticipate that we have any chance, and I mean by we, the United States, of leading the blockchain revolution, or because it seems to be happening so much slower here than other jurisdictions, are we putting ourselves at a disadvantage for truly innovating?
I think there's two sides of that coin. One side is, yes, we will be hurt a little bit by having a lack of clarity for people who are building big projects. On the other side of that coin, we have the sort of long-standing history of our capital markets in the United States and a real strong and robust regulatory environment. And so those players who are serious and are going to build global businesses have to be here. And, you know, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a little bit problematic for the near term, sorting out exactly what the regulatory play is for how those folks, you know, what their business looks like. But we will, you know, the U.S. is a market that people have to play in. And so there will be, you know, there will be a significant portion of it here.
Yeah, it's an onion. It's going to be really complicated. To your point, are you going to invest? And where are my peers in investing? Where's Heiss? Where's Maria? Cayman Islands or New York? Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an easy question. 1996, when deregulation happened in the telecommunications industry, and no offense to you guys, it created tons of regulatory mess that took lawyers and a lot of other people to untie, which where everybody said, oh, this is great for the internet. I think that problem may come up again. So I don't think there's a simple answer, and it's going to be a wait and see. Unless somebody with a strong personality in the government comes and says, you're going to do this, and to Joe's point, you get a clear flow chart.
I have a stronger opinion. I think it's a huge net hit on innovation. And the reason I think that is because what it's going to do is favor the big enterprise forays into the space who are going to bring all of their traditional baggage and do it wrong. And you know, I say that as an individual. You know, I have clients across the whole gamut, and I'm sure that would offend some of them. You know, but at the end of the day, I think it's a mistake to push businesses who are small and can't fight and can't disagree and can't afford to get into it with a regulatory agency overseas, have them get swallowed up in the challenge of that, have them not have access to the deep talent and investment here in the States, not have access to our customers in the States, the users in the States that would test this stuff out, and you're leaving a big wake where big traditional, and I say sort of short-term traditional, your big 1990s and 2000, early 2000 tech companies to swallow up the marketplace, and basically their innovation is taking what they're already doing and augmenting it. That's not the kind of disruption that this technology promises. And so I have a stronger feeling. I've seen the innovation and the things that can happen. And I've already, since the 2017 kind of crackdown, seen that innovation just shrink and wither on the vine. It's super frustrating. And I think that will continue until there's some clarity.
So really, it's putting the entrepreneur at a disadvantage for us to be so unclear and be moving so slowly. Excellent. How much time do we have?
Eight.
I don't know. Oh, 8 minutes. Oh, wow. We got a lot of more fun stuff to discuss. Okay, so. Okay, cool. Let's talk a little bit about for an entrepreneur who's considering conducting a crowd sale. They're not sure if they want to do an STO, an ICO, or an IEO. What are the risks involved in conducting each of those, and what should an entrepreneur be thinking about when really considering what the best way to conduct a crowd sale?
Go and get a lawyer who really understands this. Do a crap ton of reading and really understand what you're trying to do. And build a frickin' marketing plan, thank you, because we've seen, started me off. You really need to consider a lot of things and go deep, but go find a securities lawyer who knows what they're talking about.
Probably have more than a white paper too, right? Actually have some code written.
Well, let's assume that everything else is good and you've got a rock star executive team and resources and everything else. Just from that funding standpoint, and I can tell you why not to do one.
I mean, I'll try to do this in like a minute. Like, at the end of the day, everyone is enticed to switch from an ICO to a utility token to a security token because at least the SEC is entertaining those. And again, back to my earlier point, that's a total mistake, and it's a mistake in my opinion, and this is my opinion alone. It's a mistake because it's not clear where the utility tokens fit yet. It takes patience to get there. You switch to a security token and you're bound to treating your company like a public company, the tokens like tradable securities, when that's not what you tried to do. Now, a point from earlier, I do think that we shouldn't be as hard on regulation as we've been, because the truth is, and the dirty truth is, that lots and lots of people raised a lot of money with nothing behind it. Okay, that's truth. They people ran off with hundreds of millions of dollars and did not build hundreds of millions of dollars worth of value with what they got. And that's why the SEC is being active. That doesn't mean that there aren't a few projects that are worth hundreds of billions of dollars that are being built and deserve the funding. And we still haven't resolved that yet. So, to your point, hire somebody who knows what they're talking about and figure out which one you should be based on your goals.
Okay, so real quickly, last question. From the perspective of lawyers working in the space, have you guys seen a slowdown in the amount of interest from people who want to do ICOs, or has it been similar to what it was last year?
Yeah, there's definitely a slowdown in the sort of volume of people who are knocking on the door saying, hey, I heard about this alternative funding vehicle. What we have seen a lot of, though, is people who were, who were smart enough and didn't just see it as like, read about it in the Wall Street Journal and say, hey, maybe I should try one of those as a way to raise some money for the thing that I'm trying to build that's been struggling for a while. The people who are smart and are operating in this space have switched and said, hey, I am building a business in this space that probably is going to have a token that makes sense as part of it. And they build a really good business around it. They raise traditional VC money that's equity financing, or that maybe has like some kind of convertible feature to it where the investor may be able to take a token in the future. And so they kick down the road a little bit that question about, hey, where does this really fit? And they go out and they build a really good business and they fit the token into it. That's what we're seeing right now.
Thank you for listening to the TF Blockchain Podcast. We appreciate your support as we continue our mission to connect the broader business and technology community with blockchain innovators. For the most up-to-date information on all things TF Blockchain, please visit tfblock.io. Please like and subscribe to our podcast to be the first to hear from our amazing speakers changing the world through blockchain and crypto. If you're interested in partnering with the TF Blockchain Podcast, please email us at podcast@tfblock.io. Be on the lookout for TF Blockchain chapters coming to your city, and please reach out to us if interested in becoming a chapter director. We hope to see you soon at one of our live events. Thanks for listening, and remember, stay crypto, my friends. The views and opinions expressed at TF Blockchain events and podcasts are solely those of the ones presenting and do not necessarily reflect the position or opinion of TF Blockchain. TF Blockchain is not responsible for the opinions or content of its guests and does not endorse any particular company or currency. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be used to make investment decisions.